Liz Lozen. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast presented by Planters, satisfying your snack cravings for over 100 years. And I have been satisfied by something, you know, a little bit regular, but the weather reminds me of how necessary it is. I've been out there being all cute, sipping my PSLs, making turkey meatloaf for dinner. I don't even recognize myself anymore, right? But in Southern California, it's 100 damn degrees outside. I don't know what I'm trying to accomplish. So I am very satisfied by the efficacy of my air conditioning unit because I don't think I would have been able to survive otherwise, just melting. Andy, is it super hot in Chicago yet? Or are you guys having that perfect, like that 1 month of perfect weather that you guys get?
Yeah, it is. It is not. Fall kicked in kind of with a vengeance a couple days ago. It went from we were having 80 degree days and then boom, we were in like the mid 50s. So that's kind of where we are now. It's like drizzly and mid 50s. There's this like picture perfect idea of what fall weather should be. And then there's what fall weather actually is in Chicago, which is just a lot of drizzle and gray and entirely the wrong temperature.
Well, I'd love to say that we could switch gears to less gloomy news, but we can't. So here's some less than satisfying news to hit on before we get to previewing the weekend's games. We all obviously learned on Thursday morning that the Pittsburgh-Tennessee matchup has been postponed to sometime after week four. We don't have an official rescheduled date, but we know that it will not be this Sunday. So reminder to get your Steelers and your Titans players out of your lineups and obviously your DFS lineups too. As far as the Yahoo Fantasy game is concerned, we are going to treat this like a bye week for all of the players involved. That's the simplest way to put it. So far also, just FYI, in case y'all haven't checked the regular NFL COVID list, none of the four players placed on the COVID IR list this week by the Titans are fantasy relevant. So it does mean that you're going to have to rejigger your lineups. If you hadn't planned on it ahead of waivers clearing, then you know, that's what Andy and I are here for. We're going to talk about all of the matchups, obviously, and some of these players you're probably going to end up starting, even though you maybe hadn't planned to. I should also say that as we tape this, we know that a fifth player has tested positive, but we're not quite sure who that is yet. If this topic interests you, the in-depth discussion of how we got here, incubation periods, what went wrong, and what, you know, maybe the NFL could have done better, you should definitely check out the first half of yesterday's episode of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor. Those two guys, Charles in particular, has had his finger on the pulse of this. His long-term partner is also a nurse in Houston. So, you know, he's seen it from the POV of a healthcare worker. So it's an extra additional layer that I think his reporting has been brought to his reporting, which is particularly interesting. But overall, we're going to get to the matchups now. We hope everyone is safe in Tennessee, and we wish those players and personnel a speedy recovery.
Yeah, one thing that I guess I would just add is that I know our language around this is that we're treating it as a bye. This week is effectively going to become the bye week for these two teams. And I've had so many people hit me up and say, hey, you should place all of the players from both of these teams on the COVID IR list. And number one, it's kind of a slippery slope, obviously, to place uninjured players on an injury list or players who don't officially have that designation on an injury list. And number two, it also would set up a hugely unfair scenario where you would have two teams who during their buys are entirely eligible for the IR list, and then 30 other teams who, when they're on bye, are not eligible for the IR list. And you've got to make drops. You've got to make hard decisions. So all of this is messy, as you have said. I mean, this is obviously an incredibly messy situation. I would also suggest that it's not perfect, and I don't normally think that people should alter their league settings after a draft, but you can actually add bench spots during the season. And it's a thing to consider because people should have considered it in the preseason. Like we wrote about this a little bit, not only adding IR spots, but also potentially adding bench spots for situations exactly like this one. Because it's certainly not out of the question that we have other postponed games. Like this can come up again. So you can add bench spots in season in private leagues.
I think that's great advice, Andy. And you're right. I mean, we went into the season talking a lot about this is a real possibility. And now that it's here and we've seen it can happen, probably best to prepare for it happening again, even though that is not something at all that we are hoping for.
Yeah, yeah. And be kind to your commissioners, too, because they're all facing all your private league commissioners are facing you know, there's a couple of people yelling at them in each league, right? Like, that's none of this is their fault. Like, that this is 2020. And these are the type of situations that we encounter around like every curve in 2020. So be kind to them. It's a terrible situation. We all have nothing but bad choices.
Perfectly stated. Hashtag 2020. Let's talk about a matchup in which you have two prominent figures on both teams, or as part of both teams, who are also screaming, "It's not my fault, it's not my fault." The Drew Brees-led New Orleans Saints and the Matt Patricia-coached Detroit Lions are facing off on Sunday morning. Good news in this one is not just that. We saw Kenny Golladay return last week, so he figures to play again in week 4, but also that Michael Thomas is back at practice and appears, knock on some wood, good to go.
Golladay, we should say, first of all, looked like vintage Kenny Golladay. Like, if there was any worry about him coming back at some sort of limited capacity, I mean, he gave you a touchdown. He played a ton of snaps. Nothing to worry about there. Somehow, like, this is just the stat that I know I'm going to track for Drew Brees all season. His average depth of target right now, like, it went down. It was already only 5 yards per throw, which was by far the lowest in the league. It went down to 4.8. So he's barely throwing the ball forward at all in any way. We'll see if Michael Thomas changes that, because obviously Michael Thomas's targets are not like other targets. We're probably no longer going to see Alvin Kamara just targeted, you know, 14 times, 16 mm-hmm. times at the line of scrimmage, which is what is driving it down for Brees. So hopefully they're able to actually push the ball downfield. That is not a problem for Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford's average depth of target is almost twice what Brees's is. It's one of the highest in the league.
So your big thing then would be to watch for this matchup, whether or not the return of Michael Thomas draws Drew Brees into more productivity.
Yeah, we need Brees pushing the ball downfield. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be like vintage Ben Roethlisberger. It doesn't have to be like Watson, but 4 times a game, like 4 or 5 times a game. You got to take shots, because, I mean, you can't leave, no matter how good you are, how accurate you are, whatever, you can't leave defenses with only 5 yards of field to defend. That is not a plan for the full season. Like, Kamara's great, but he can't break off, like, he can't make miracles happen every game on every catch.
And I think this was a point that you made last week, and it bears repeating, and that is, we knew this about Drew Brees, right? This is not necessarily a surprise. The surprise is that every once in a while, the 4 times per game, when he did throw up a rainbow, it was there, right? And now they ain't no lucky charms at the end of that thing.
Right, right. They hit it almost every time a couple of years ago. Like, he may have suffered an injury late in the season a couple of years ago, but when he was having that crazy year and off to a tremendous start, like, for 3 quarters of the season, he had an almost perfect passer rating on deep throws. Like, they didn't do it a lot, but when they did it, it resulted in huge field flipping plays, long touchdowns. Like, they were almost perfect at it. So it has to remain part of their offense. And
this would be a matchup, you know, in which that should work for him, right?
Yes.
We're not scared of the Lions secondary. So this should be an opportunity for him to get back in that groove. I'm particularly interested in TJ Hockenson. We already talked about Kenny Golladay and how he looked great. Obviously you're expecting Lattimore to cover Golladay for the majority of the game. Marvin Jones gets the jackrabbit, but we've seen New Orleans struggle, obviously Darren Waller, right, against the tight end position. And there are plenty of defensive playmakers who can stop Hockenson, but I have to imagine that he will be peppered, and this is an opportunity for him to maybe hopefully finally find the end zone.
Yeah, no, it's a good call. And we have a couple of fantasy relevant tight ends that are obviously unexpected scratches this week in Ebron and Smith. And Hockenson is a terrific pivot, as you say. It sure seems like it's going to be a great matchup after that Waller game.
We've got the Chargers at Tampa Bay. All of that Keenan Allen heat that I took in the offseason, using, frankly, I kept saying, but Andy Behrens taught me back when I was not even a part of Yahoo Fantasy, that talent is the tiebreaker. And I was taking him everywhere. I have so much exposure to Keenan Allen. Felt real good last week, and particularly good knowing that he has 37 targets. He's drawn 37 targets over the season. And for reference, because sometimes we need to contextualize, I'm someone who's like, oh, that's a number. But like, that's the same number of looks as Nuke Hopkins. He is leading the lead with 37 targets. And obviously he didn't see that, excuse me, in week 1. So obviously Justin Herbert has brought and rebounded his fantasy relevance.
Yeah, this is a kind of messy comparison, but I mean, you look at what Herbert has done so far. As he has 641 passing yards in two games. Not, you know, it hasn't been perfect. It hasn't been a clinic, but man, this is really close to the way Phillip Rivers would have managed the offense, right? Because Allen was just targeted 19 times. Like, we're not going to see that many games all season in which anyone sees 18 or 19 targets. It's a ridiculous total. But this is the kind of thing that we would have seen from Rivers. All of a sudden, Austin Eckler is a relevant receiver again. And not just, I shouldn't just say a relevant receiver. He's a high volume receiver again. Mm-hmm. So this is good. Like, this is exactly what you would have expected from the Chargers offense with Phillip Rivers at the controls, which is, you know, so think back to the way that you would have valued all these guys before you thought it was going to be the Tyrod and potentially Herbert show. Like, this has been really good news so far. Like, I don't know that Herbert is going to be great long term, but he's certainly good enough to support multiple startable fantasy commodities.
So we should also mention that probably Keenan Allen's target share was inflated because Mike Williams left the game early with a hamstring issue. I have not read yet whether or not he is good to go for week four, Mike Williams, that is. So if he is out, you could see another big volume game for Keenan Allen. Of course, obviously, though, the Tampa Bay defense, pretty good. They're tied for the league lead in takeaways, third in rushing yards allowed. So the opportunities will be there, but they will be difficult opportunities.
Yeah, no, that's true. We did see Herbert have a game, though, against Kansas City, and Kansas City has been relatively stingy defensively. They obviously just shut down the Ravens. I think he's good enough to move the ball against this. But yeah, I mean, you're totally right. Tampa Bay is a credible defense. We shouldn't expect, you know, just an absolute shootout in this one. But again, I think Herbert can get us to 280 yards or so, which is really all we need.
My fear is that there might be enough tape on Herbert now. Like, I think that the Kansas City Chiefs were a little bit blindsided with him being the starter and hadn't prepared for Herbert, right? And now there's more available, and I think the Tampa Bay defense is good enough, and now that they have enough tape that they might be able to adjust accordingly. I still think that the volume is good. You're going to start these guys, but I also think, as when we talk about roster construction and balance, when you are starting Keenan Allen, is probably your wide receiver too, frankly, unless, you know, you have the Pittsburgh Titans issue to deal with, or you have holes, but probably he's your wide receiver too. You might want to consider him like a higher floor type play, and then try to reach for a ceiling in your flex play just to make up for what he wouldn't normally get. But let's talk about Tampa Bay, because it looks like we're going to have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin back finally in week four. I mean, we've been waiting for this arsenal that Tom Brady has at his disposal to be fully healthy, and it feels like it's finally going to be this week. And again, obviously, the Chargers, very, very good defense as well.
This is tough for Tampa Bay, because we still don't know the Godwin situation. I don't believe he's been practicing yet this week. So we've got to, like, we've got to watch that. Evans just put up that hilarious stat line, right?
Two
catches, two yards, two touchdowns. I think it was the third time in NFL history that anybody had ever caught two touchdowns for 2 yards. Like, and they weren't even, it wasn't even 2 yards. Like, really, it was like 2 feet. Anyway, amazing stat line for him. But like, at some point, the Chargers defense has to be regarded as relatively friendly matchup, because they've lost so many pieces. They've done reasonably well so far, but they have taken so much damage to this point in the season. You would have to think that Tom Brady and this offense can exploit it. Scotty Miller, I think, also dinged right now. So there's a lot of ambiguously injured players on the Tampa Bay side. This is going to be one of those game day start sit decisions.
Is this the opportunity that Gronk has been waiting for? He like shook off the rust at the top. You talk about the injuries to the Chargers. Obviously, there's no Derwin James and there's no Scotty Miller. So we need a security blanket. I mean, if Godwin can't be cleared, though, again, I expect he will be, but you're right. We don't have a definitive on that. Like, do we finally get the Gronk game? Is that the most, also in week four of all weeks, is that the most perfect 2020 play?
I feel like such a newbie for not seeing through what was going on in Tampa Bay last week, because Gronk was actually targeted, like, I want to say he was targeted 7 times last week, in a week in which we actually heard Bruce Arians say, why would I ever throw to the tight end position when I have such great wide receivers? And you know, like, Gronk has sort of downplayed his role. So, of course, he was going to lead the team in targets or close to it. I think both he and Howard can be relevant. They may swap weeks occasionally, But like all of a sudden, and I'm in a bunch of leagues where Gronk was dropped. And again, with Johnny out, with Ebron out, I think he's totally in play. If he's on your waiver wire, he's definitely an addition of interest.
I had someone on Twitter ask me what to do because he has both Ben Roethlisberger and Ryan Tannehill. And I immediately pointed him towards the Jacksonville at Cincinnati game.
Yeah.
Which we are about to discuss. The Jags defense allowing the highest passer rating in the league this year. So I know that Minshew is coming off of an underwhelming effort, right? But he's had time to collect himself. And the Cincinnati defense, though better than the Jags defense, I mean, this is like kind of perfect, right? Because like Minshew's defense is bad, so he's going to have to keep throwing. Cincinnati's defense can be had, so he needs to keep throwing. And on the other side of things, and I'm mentioning Minshew first, not just because he's the traveling quarterback, but because he is the more available in terms of the waiver wire, I'm imagining, a quarterback. So both of these guys, whether Minshew or Burrow, take a look at either of them on the, let's see, right now Minshew is available in over 50% of leagues. I'll look up Burrow while you comment.
Yeah, no, I think that's the right way to look at this because Minshew's just sort of in the middle of this tremendous stretch of matchups. And he's obviously coming off a dog of a game that disappointed people. So I imagine people who've been streaming quarterbacks have probably kicked him to the curb after last Thursday, but he gets DJ Chark back. We think Chark has returned to practice. That should be, he was a bit of a surprise inactive, I thought, last week. And part of that was probably the fact that it was just a shortened week for the team. Right. And he couldn't turn around in 4 days, getting him back in place. Like everybody saw, if you watch that game, how poor Conley played. Like he was a mess. And those are the targets that will go to Chark. There was the downfield miss that should have been a walk-in touchdown for Conley that Minshew overthrew. There were drops. Like, you know, Chark hasn't been heavily targeted this season. I think he only has 7 targets on the year, but he hasn't dropped any of them. He's caught everything. He's got a touchdown. He was a top 10 fantasy receiver basically until the injury last year. So for me, Minshew is sort of all systems go. It's not going to surprise me if he's a top 12 quarterback here.
And to that end, I also think that James Robinson becomes,
yeah.
I mean, he's like an every week RB1 on that RB1, RB2 bubble. Maybe this week. I mean, would you have, just theoretically, would you have ranked Robinson ahead of James Conner?
No, I don't have him quite there yet because he's not like, Robinson's a really good runner and he's the clear early down runner for that team. James Conner offers a little bit more as a receiver right now. And it's an offense that I think a little bit higher of, but they would have been close. Like, I think they're both top 15 running backs. I don't think we have to wonder very at this stage, whether we actually need to play James Robinson. He's just a set it and forget it sort of starter right now. I think I have him higher than Mixon. I'll say I think I have him higher than the guy on the other side of this game who really troubles me. Not because of his own talent. Like I love watching Joe Mixon play and I appreciate that a foundational cornerstone of this offense is still to put Joe Mixon in terrible situations, like 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage and then watch him scamper for like a 3-yard gain. Like those are fun. Those plays are always fun. They're not throwing to him, right? He has 7 receptions. Right? He has 7 receptions heading into week 4. That's part, like, that has to be part of his game if this isn't going to be some high scoring offense.
I think when you have this matchup, though, this has to be the now or never. Also, he's wildly affordable in our DFS game. So,
yeah,
you know, all things, nothing is static ever, especially in the NFL. So if there is going to be a rebound point for Joe Mixon, this has got to be it. I am still, he's outside of my top 12. I think I have him at like RB 14 to 16 ish, maybe that range. But I am still, I have him in a league or two. I am still like willing to try it out this week before completely giving up. We'll see. I do want to talk about the receivers in Cincinnati quickly. Tyler Boyd, obviously, you're starting him for all the reasons you drafted him. He is the floor. He is regularly peppered. But those high value targets, he can get there after the catch, but the high value targets in the red area of the field on a regular basis or the deeper targets. We talked about how at the top of the season, AJ Green getting the looks, but seemed out of sync. And then last week, things seemed to shift to the, as you coined the phrase, AJ Green replicant, T. Higgins. Have we seen the baton be passed here?
Yeah, I will say Higgins on the touchdowns last week was almost totally uncovered. And some of that's him and some of that is the relative attention that defenses are paying to him. So they were easy pitch and catch throws. He didn't have a totally clean game. Like he's not the most polished receiver out there necessarily, but he's big. He's like a catch radius guy. You know, he can leap a little bit. Like he just profiles as so close to AJ Green. When AJ Green was coming at, like, I think one of the knocks on AJ Green is he, you know, maybe he didn't run the 40 that everybody wanted him to. And Higgins was kind of in that same boat, but like Higgins was just a highlight machine at Clemson, a wonderful collegiate player who faced the most daunting matchups in the country in the biggest moments. Right. And was great. I don't have a lot of doubts about T. Higgins as a future pro. And yeah, it's not going to surprise me if T. Higgins finishes this season with like 8 or 9 touchdowns. I think that's totally in play. Probably not 1,000 yards. He's going to be one of these boom bust guys, but I think he's probably got 2 or 3 more games in him where he finds the end zone maybe more than once.
I think this is a week, when we were talking a little bit earlier about roster construction, reaching for a ceiling, this is a matchup in which I would feel comfortable throwing in Higgins because of his touchdown potential that you mentioned as my flex. Also, he's rostered in 28% of our leagues. Like, this is someone that I would like to play the matchups with, especially if I am looking forward, knowing that they're probably maybe more unexpected bye weeks, and bye weeks themselves are coming up anyway. I am very interested in having him on my bench and playing the matchups, and I'm very interested to see what he does this weekend in an easy matchup, though you have to, you know, obviously say like, well, if the matchup is easy, then AJ Green should be able to produce in the way he wants to. But I'm not quite sure that Joe Burrow has the connection with AJ Green that he does with Higgins, obviously, of the rookie class. And I don't think Cincinnati cares anymore. I think they're ready to move on.
Yeah. Well, they're also letting Joe Burrow throw the ball 50, 60 times. Like,
so he has to.
Yeah. So we don't even really have to worry about where Higgins falls in the receiving hierarchy because, you know, like if they're going to throw the ball 60 times, 55 times, whatever, he's going to see 6 of those. He's going to see 8 of those. The targets are going to be there.
My mea culpa, by the way, for the Drew Sample pick. I was a little too gobstopped by the one-handed catch. I didn't really think he could do that. And guess what? Nobody else does either. That's why he went back to blocking. And when you see Joe Burrow getting blown up because his line is trapped regularly, you understand why Drew Sample's going to go back to blocking. So my apologies for that one. If it makes anyone feel better, I also follow my own advice and I got bit for it. So there you go. let's talk about Minnesota at Houston. There's a lot of levels to this one. I feel like there's so much going on. Obviously, as of the taping, there have been no positive tests for the Vikings, which were the Titans' opponents last week. But you might want to keep an eye on things. I have to imagine that after playing one of the most insane schedules to start this season, Houston is feeling that they have an opportunity to catch a break here, right? Like, it can't be awesome for the Vikings to go into this game 0-3, which nobody in Minnesota anticipated. Well, I mean, maybe people who live there. But no one on the staff anticipated. And then this has been like a stressful and confusing week. And they've got to travel to Houston, who's pretty dang desperate. This could be like a UFC fight of sorts.
Yeah, I feel like the Minnesota defense is going to be just a gift that keeps on giving for a little while. Right. Like, we've mentioned this with some other teams. Like, I feel like this is an obvious, like, get right game for Deshaun Watson and the Houston offense. It has to be because their schedule has been monstrous. It's been absolutely brutal. Like, it's not, you know, if you've been disappointed by Deshaun so far, it really has more to do with the schedule than it does anything else. The one issue, I guess, with that offense is that Will Fuller popped up on the injury report with a yet another hamstring issue. Like, it's commonly a hamstring with him. Perhaps that was really the problem a couple of weeks ago when he put up the 0.
No, really, when we saw his hamstring, like, being massaged on the sideline.
Yeah, and then he wasn't listed on the injury report at all. Yeah, so that's obviously going to be an issue. And you never expect Will Fuller to play through a hamstring issue either. I feel like we've had this fire drill enough that you should be pretty pessimistic on him coming into game day. But still, they've had some success with Cobb. They've had some success with Cooks. David Johnson is still there. Watson's a phenomenal player. So this feels like a breakout spot for Deshaun Watson. I would have said coming into this week that he had a real shot at being the QB1, but you know, if I can't get Will Fuller in this one, maybe I would back off that pick.
So Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks have basically taken turns being healthy, right? Like they've rotated on and off the field, and there's some overlap in their skill sets, right? Like downfield speed type players. Randall Cobb, I swear this is the truth, leads the Houston receivers in yards right now. He is the leading receiver for the Houston Texans in terms of yardage. And he's also crushing it in targets. I think this is the play, guys. Like Deshaun Watson, here's the thing. Randall Cobb is not the security blanket that any of us imagined for Deshaun Watson, but yo, this is it. And also, he is still, despite his theoretically advanced age, crushing after the catch, which is nice. It's padding everybody's stats, right? We like to see that. He is likely to draw, if Mike Hughes can't get healthy, the cornerback for Minnesota can't get healthy, he didn't play last week, he's likely, Cobb will, draw Jeff Gladney, who is a rookie, I believe out of TCU, and has struggled in coverage. He's allowing a passer rating of, last I checked, 104 to opposing QBs. So some places say 102, some places say 106. Everybody has kind of a different system, but let's call it at 104. So I think Cobb, because of his reliability, that's also wild to say, because of his reliability and because of the matchup, like, this is a flex. Like, we talk about the slot receivers. We talk about Jameson Crowder, right? And blah, gross. Like, that's Randall Cobb right now.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. And listen, if you sign up for a full PPR league, that is what you're signing up for. You're signing up for Jameson Crowder and for Randall Cobb and for Cole Beasley and for Hunter Renfro. Like, that's that's who carries you, like, as a wide receiver three through a lot of weeks, right? Those guys who are just always 6 catches, 65 yards. Maybe there's no touchdown there, but it's still double digit fantasy points in a full PPR league. And Cobb certainly fits that description. Plus, he's with just a quarterback with some rare gifts. And some of that after the catch ability is a reflection of the accuracy of a quarterback and the decision making and processing of a quarterback. And you're going to get that with Deshaun. So, yeah, I think he's a really strong start in this one. On the other side, I'm all in on Justin Jefferson. I'm really excited for this. I think that breakout game was real. Loved watching him jaw with Malcolm Butler. Like, that was just one of the great matchups of week three. That was really fun. And you can kind of forgive a rookie receiver who needed a couple weeks to break out in a year without a preseason, right? Like, just makes perfect sense.
He was also
sense.
On the COVID list. So he missed, over the summer. He didn't just miss the preseason. He missed practice time ahead of that.
Yeah, so like I think he's settled in now as the clear number two, and like Adam Thielen is still sitting around, I think, 50% of this team's targeted air yards, which is kind of crazy. Like nobody's gonna hold that number for the full season, but like they were so reliant on Thielen. Jefferson's breakout should just make such a difference for the offense. Like they needed somebody to step up and be this guy, and it wasn't going to be BC Johnson. And so now that he's, now that he sort of has that role, I expect him to be a wide receiver too the rest of the way.
I like it. I think that's a bold call, and I also agree with it. Let's talk about Seattle at Miami. This is, again, if you're looking for replacements for Ben Roethlisberger, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has been nothing but magic, is in a really good spot. The line on this game, I believe, is currently, 53, I want to say, per BetMGM. I'm sorry, it's 54. So the over-under on this game is 54. Vegas is obviously expecting a bit of a ping pong match. That's great for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's got great receivers. I like this as a Preston Williams game as well. I think that he's a player they robbed. I mean, Mike Gesicki has been unlocked as the team slot receiver for all intents and purposes anyway, but we've seen that. I think this is a nice Preston Williams game. And again, Ryan Fitzpatrick has been very efficient. He's completing, I think he has a current YPA, I believe, of 7.1. And completing around 70% of his passes, which is top six. Also getting some rushing yards. He's in the top 10 in terms of rushing yards among quarterbacks as well.
Yeah, he went 18 for 20 last week. And like one of the misses bounced off Gesicki's face, right? Like he was just deadly accurate all game. He was phenomenal. And he's facing a defense that is currently allowing 430.7 passing yards per game. The lowest single game passing total against Seattle this year has been 397 by Cam Newton. It's almost been under discussed, the fact that Seattle's defense hasn't stopped a thing. Like they have not stopped a thing. This is a great spot for Fitzpatrick. there's really nothing else to say on the Seattle side except start them all. We can worry a little bit about Chris Carson. He did at least surface at practice this week, which is good to see, because I think we'd all assumed after last week's cheap shot on Carson that he was going to miss a week or two. He may have a chance to play. That would be great. If he doesn't, Carlos Hyde is going to get all that early down work, and that's good for him.
Yep, agree. Last thing we should talk about, the running backs, Miles Gaskins, who you and I have been talking about since I think the start of the season as a pass catching back, or a back who excels in the receiving game. He logged 75% of the snaps last week versus Jacksonville. So if there was any question as to who the RB1 is in Miami, it's Miles Gaskin.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 27 touches, something like that. The only thing he doesn't get are the 1 yard carries that go to Jordan Howard, but everything else goes to Gaskin.
Let's talk about Cleveland at Dallas next, because, I have a question for you. I think we were all sweating. This is another potentially high scoring game. The projected over under currently via BetMGM is 56 points on this one. Which seems a bit wild for two theoretically run first operations.
Yeah, no, it's true. Some of the numbers against Dallas are just sort of skewed by the fact that they've faced Russell Wilson, right? And it feels like while he's going this way, he's just going to mess up stats for a lot of teams, right? Because they're just going to score 35, 38 points a week, and there's nothing you can do about it, no matter like what kind of quality your defense is. But Dallas, right at this moment, they're allowing the third most fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks, the second most to wide receivers, the 10th most to tight ends. Like, it is a really friendly matchup. They've been, you know, auditioning potential new members of the secondary, looking at guys off the street, right? Like, they need help. They are not whatever you thought the defense was going to be. They ain't that. So it is a very friendly spot for Baker Mayfield, who would be a questionable starter most weeks, probably not this week. There are some notable, like, kind of vague injuries on the Cleveland side, right? Like, OBJ popped up with I think it was a back injury midweek. Kareem Hunt is dealing with a groin injury that isn't considered particularly serious, but it would be nice to see him practice before this one. So these are major receiving threats for that team, obviously. But if they can both go, I think Baker can be a really quality start here.
If Kareem Hunt can't go, how many carries does Nick Chubb get in the first half?
Yeah, it might be like, it's probably like 18, right? Like,
right?
It's a huge workload. He probably finishes the game with 30 touches, and he's gonna vault to, I would imagine, everybody's RB1 if Kareem Hunt can't go.
Last thing on this, is Cedric Wilson a thing, really, Andy? Like, do we need to add him to the cadre of players that we always regularly keep our eye on?
Yeah, John Paulson and I talked about this on the Pickups podcast. I just can't believe he is. This is like it's lazy to make a comparison to the same team, but this
Kevin
feels like
Ogletree.
the Ogletree game from a few years ago, right? Like, I mean, CeeDee Lamb is going to remain a huge part of this team's future. Amari Cooper has been a ridiculous target magnet all year. Michael Gallup is tremendous. Like, there's not going to be, as good as Dak is, as good as the offense is, there's probably not going to be room for like a fourth wide receiver that we have to really keep track of. Like, this was an isolated blow up game. They happen. I wouldn't count on it repeating.
Also, if we're worried about, you know, everyone was worried about Michael Gallup, and I mean, I was biting my fingernails until the very end, right, of last Sunday. But if Michael Gallup is going to be like the downfield guy, then this is an opportunity. Then this matchup is when you can feel comfortable, right? It looks like CeeDee Lamb, especially with the Cowboys O-line, not 100%. So CeeDee Lamb looks to be a little bit like that safety valve, that short to intermediate yardage option for Dak Prescott. And then Gallup is, and Amari Cooper just doing whatever inconsistent nonsense he's doing, but he always fine. But then Michael Gallup is the downfield clutch option. And so when I see Vegas putting such a high projected point total on this game, I feel comfortable with Gallup. And that might be how we have to think of him moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, you can, as a Michael Gallup, as somebody who has a ton of Michael Gallup,
same.
Like, you can feel pretty nervous watching the Cowboys play, because like 20 minutes will go by and Michael Gallup won't see a target, right? But his targets are of such high value, and he's so good and such an explosive player, right? Like, if they continually target him 25 yards downfield, he eventually makes a little fantasy noise. Like, you can get a little nervous watching him, and he's not going to have very many games where he draws like 14, 15 targets. That's not his role in the offense, but he is an elite just lid lifter, and he's going to be great all season because the offense is going to be great. I do want to also say that Dalton Schultz, while he didn't have some blow up game, he kind of doubled down a little bit. Like, he saw 6 targets, finished with 48 yards. Your tight ends are going to do that. You don't have to drop them after a 48 yard game. Like, that's right. Fine for a tight end. He, like, that was within the expectations for Jarwin too. So off the 10 target game, for him to see another 6 targets, I thought was a really good sign.
That's a great point. Arizona at Carolina. How is Kyler Murray not everybody's QB2 in this matchup?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Like, obviously an incredible runner. We've seen it plenty this year. Coming off a somewhat disappointing game that was still great for fantasy. Yeah. It's just an absolutely stellar matchup. Yeah, absolutely. I fully agree with you.
The Panthers are allowing the most rushing touchdowns this season. So we know that Kyler can, like, do both of the things, all of the things. So I have him as my QB2 ahead of Lamar Jackson. I know that that is sacrilege, but I just can't not in this matchup. I'm also willing to pay full freight for in order to have his services for DFS if I were to set a lineup. What is your big thing for this game? I mean, I think immediately if I'm looking at the matchup, I think about, outside of Kyler being next level, when I think about Carolina, I think Teddy Bridgewater's playing really good, clean ball, and that's great, but it's also really benefiting Robbie Anderson, who has been consistent, which is something that, when you think of Robbie Anderson, that's not necessarily the word that comes to mind.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson is seeing like 8 to 10 targets a week. This is not the Robbie Anderson that would get 5 targets and you hoped that one of them went for a 45-yard touchdown. Like, this is Robbie Anderson with volume, which has been great because it gives him a floor where you don't have to feel like you're gonna tank your matchup if he happens to only catch 2 of his 5 targets for like 20 yards, right? Like, there just haven't been a lot of those games. Volume has been there all year, and I think it was like, if I had to point to one big thing on the Carolina side, it would be the fact that Mike Davis did everything we could have hoped for. 21 touches, over 3/4 of the snaps played on offense. So, like, he was the guy. And when he wasn't the guy, they were handing the ball to Curtis Samuel. But this is basically, you know, Mike Davis is going to get as much burn as he can handle while McCaffrey's out, which is really good to see.
The double-digit carries and the opportunities in the passing game. He is a rock-solid RB2 with that sort of involvement, yep. Right?
Yep, all right. Absolutely.
And Arizona, Kenyon Drake. So I've heard, you know, there's a little bit about worry surrounding Kenyon Drake's lack of involvement in the passing game and how that looks like there is a bit of a schism in terms of workload and that passing game work leaning more towards Chase Edmonds. But I don't think that Chase Edmonds is going to have that many opportunities in this game because of the match. I mean, because Carolina is so bad versus the run, I don't think you're going to need to worry about Chase Edmonds.
Yeah, Edmonds is just not playing enough that we can rely on him. And outside of like a really cluttered bye week, he just can't be started. He's exciting enough that I want to keep him on a roster in case anything were to happen to Drake. But Drake is still seeing volume. Like, this is the blow up spot for Kenyon Drake. Right. You can worry a little bit about Kenyon Drake if it doesn't happen here, because everybody has found the end. Every running back has found the end zone against Carolina this season. Not going to surprise me at all if Kenyon Drake scores 2 touchdowns in this one. Like, he should, based on what everybody else has done against Carolina. We should get multiple touchdowns from Kenyon Drake in this one.
Agreed. So, not that my point was that people should consider starting Chase Edmonds, but that he might take away from Drake's opportunities. But I don't think that, given this potential game script, no, that's going to be a situation to wring your hands over. Indianapolis at Chicago. Okay, so Nick Foles. By the way, Andy, I just have to call back to FFL because, you know, I burned my Palo Santo when talking about Mitch Trubisky. Obviously, they were playing the Falcons. And it looked to be a good matchup for Mitch, and I was trying to clear all the bad energy out if I was going to put his name in my mouth. And then you said that I used witchcraft, and I would say maybe I cast a spell better than anyone intended. Because look what I did.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. I don't know exactly what the intent of the spell was. And I don't know about the inner workings of your coven or anything like that, but I'm glad you did it. I'm really glad to see Nick Foles at the controls of this offense. It's surprising that it did. Like, once you didn't pick up Mitch's fifth year option, like, that was it. That was it. And I don't know why he started the year as at quarterback, but whatever. It's over now.
For Ryan Pace. Yes, it's over now.
We don't have to deal with that anymore. It was obviously good for Allen Robinson. Not that Nick Foles is, you know, I mean, obviously he had a Super Bowl moment. He's a Super Bowl MVP. He's like seven touchdown Nick Foles. Clearly not a consistent quarterback. There are plenty of flaws with Nick Foles, but he is a competent starting quality NFL quarterback, which I just don't think is an apt description of Mitch Trubisky. And he's willing to take big shots, and he's much more likely to hit deep shots than Mitch is. He's not really sort of the see it, throw it quarterback that Mitch is, right? Like, Nick Foles will let the ball go before a receiver is in his break, right? And like, the timing just feels right with Nick Foles. I think this is good for Anthony Miller. I think this is obviously good for Allen Robinson, who had a monster game against Atlanta, and like, everything just clicked once Foles was in the game. I don't know that wouldn't have happened for Mitch, because it's such a, you know, Atlanta has just been such a miserable defense all year. Like, Mitch was probably going to have a game eventually, but you know, it's not like you can't wait for like fourth quarter Mitch Trubisky heroics every time out. So No. Everything should be better now that Foles is at the controls.
Yeah, the 3-0 Bears are definitely surging. Unfortunately, they're playing. Do you like that? They're playing a Colts team that has allowed the fewest passing yards this season, which means we have to talk a little bit about Chicago's backfield. Tariq Cohen has an ACL, lost for the season. The provincial thought, and I am using that word purposefully, the provincial thought, because I have been exposed to Matt Nagy enough, is that David Montgomery now would be in a prime position, except... Of course, Nagy talks about how Cordarrelle Patterson, who, by the way, last week I called the team's RB2, is going to see a lot more opportunities. Now, obviously, I'm being like a little bit facetious. You have to imagine that David Montgomery is going to see relatively more opportunities, but that doesn't mean that Cordarrelle Patterson is going away.
No, I think we're probably like 3 days from having to have a should Patterson have RB eligibility conversation.
I need to clear it. You need the
witchcraft again. I'm sorry about that. Like, but I mean, we are going to see Patterson in the backfield. We've seen it a little bit this season. We're probably going to see a little bit more. Not that he's exactly like Cohen, but he is the sort of gadgety player that you can do whatever whimsical things Matt Nagy wants to do. You can do them with Patterson just as well as you can do them with Cohen. So we're going to see plenty of them. So I think to your real point here, you're right. This doesn't mean that all of Cohen's projected touches now go to David Montgomery. It's not like that.
Indianapolis, this team is like as uninspiring as possible. Like, I want to be, they had so many great pieces. Like, we talked about Paris Campbell, yeah, right, in week one, and that looked exciting. And then I was like, all right, well, Michael Pittman is someone, another rookie, that he's got some great, like, after the catchability and versatility and a toughness to him. And he could be exciting. He has an opportunity now to stand up. And T.Y. Hilton's getting calls from his grandma, and they ain't making a damn bit of difference. And now I have to imagine. So I should also mention that Michael Pittman, the reason I'm bringing him up is that he had surgery on his calf. So he is out until week 8, 9-ish, something in that range. And so now we look at the receivers, and you've got T.Y. Hilton and Mo Alie Cox. And last week you and I talked about, oh man, all those Mo Alie Cox takes, all that opportunity. I guess those, like, we have to push aside or pause for a moment because Jack Doyle's on the field. Thank God. Thank God Phillip Rivers was like, nah, man, I need somebody athletic and electric to do something. And Mo Alie Cox, I don't know if you know this, Andy, he played basketball. He is that guy. Currently leading the league in yards after catch. Asterisk, George Kittle hasn't played a game since week one. But still, this is exciting. And I think he has real sleeper potential. Like, this is a guy who now has, like, I would say, like, top 14 to 12 potential, just because you look at how much Phillip Rivers likes to lean on the position, how shallow the receiving options are, and how, frankly, uninspiring Zach Pascal and unfortunately T.Y. Hilton have become.
Yeah, it was one of the best things, you know, kind of under the radar things that we saw from week three, was that Mo Alie Cox was still involved, that he didn't just go back on the shelf with Jack Doyle's return. That was awesome to see. I can't believe that this offense all of a sudden is back to, like, we're back to talking about Zach Pascal as like a deep league, you know, fantasy play. That's just really, it's just really disappointing. But Mo Alie-Cox should remain a thing. He's obviously not going to blow up every week, because I don't know that he's going to play as many snaps as anybody wants, but he's probably still going to steadily see 3 to 6 targets, with targets in goal to go situations as well. You would think that given their lack of receiving options right now, that Nyheim Hines would remain part of the game plan as well. I hope that's true, because I have a fair amount of Nyheim Hines. I do think that we're going to see better things from T.Y. Hilton, and I kind of view Hilton as, especially since he was so heavily targeted in the first couple of games, they didn't really need him last week, obviously. Like, I think he's a bit of a buy low. I think anybody who's got T.Y. Hilton on a roster is fairly disgusted, because he had some early drops. He at least caught everything that was thrown his way last week. That was good to see. So we can't say that grandma's pep talk didn't help. The workload wasn't necessarily there. I think there's probably a bigger role for him. I think there's probably a bigger role for him here. And obviously with Campbell and Pittman both sidelined, like, Hilton's going to have some games where he sees 12 targets.
Do you think he's going to do anything against the Bears, though, in this matchup?
No, I don't think this is a blow up spot for Hilton by any means. But I think the workload is steadily going to be there. And I think we have to almost throw last week out the window, because they were barely, you know, I mean, they're barely playing an NFL caliber roster, really. Like,
we'll,
like, all of a sudden the Colts have the number one defense in fantasy too, by the way, off of last week. I just want to throw that out there.
It's a very, very fair point. The Ravens are traveling. Well, they're not really traveling, because they're facing the Washington football team. This is like the Battle of Delmarva, if you will. A crosstown classic. Chase Young, unfortunately, for the Washington football team, is expected to miss week 4, this game against the Ravens. And that's problematic, because the Ravens like to run a lot.
Yeah, this is like it. Yeah, you don't need an expert to tell you that this is quite a bounce back spot for Lamar Jackson
right.
after a disappointing Monday nighter in which he didn't even reach 100 passing yards. He was still great on the ground, but, you know, you're obviously not going to beat Kansas City unless everything is clicking. A win over the Washington football team obviously doesn't really erase the sting of the loss to the Chiefs, but I would expect this to be, like, the Ravens are just going to have a bunch of games all year, as they did last year, in all likelihood, where, you know, it's over by halftime. And this is kind of the recipe for one of those, because Chase Young is an obvious difference maker, and not having him on the field is just, it leaves you thinking that there's really not a lot of hope for Washington here. So this has the vibe of one of those games that gets to 40 points for the Ravens pretty quick.
But then isn't there an opportunity for Lamar Jackson, like we saw in the game against Houston, to just sort of ride it on out and not produce a ton of fantasy stats?
Yeah, they just have to get to 40 points somehow, right? And that probably involves 80 rushing yards for Lamar Jackson and 200 passing and 3 touchdowns. Like, that's not going to surprise me at all. I mean, I fully expect Lamar Jackson to give us 3 touchdowns in this game. Like, some combination of on the ground, through the air. It's a bounce back week for, like,
on the ground. Yeah.
Andrews just had a, you know, you would, again, it wasn't, you wouldn't exactly call it a drop. It would have been a great catch in the end zone, but he did let the ball go in the end zone on Monday night. So it's a bounce back spot for him. We would like to think that Hollywood Brown could get a little something going here too.
I agree. All right. For the Washington side of things, we saw Antonio Gibson, right? He's been on the rise. That's been great. Ravens haven't allowed a rushing touchdown this season. So just temper your expectations. We wanted to say thanks again to our sponsor for this episode, Planters. When you want to satisfy a salty craving, Planters has you covered. Their deluxe mixed nuts are roasted to perfection and seasoned with sea salt, giving you the crunchy texture and enhanced flavor you crave. Stay satisfied with Planters deluxe mixed nuts. And we're back with the Sunday late-ish games, Giants at Rams. Cam Akers likely out, so we know what we're doing here, right?
We do know what we're doing here. We're leaning on Daryl Henderson again. He's been great. Like, he's been absolutely great. The Rams are an easy offense for fantasy purposes. It's Woods, it's Kupp, it's Higby, it's Henderson right now instead of Brown. The Giants are quite a mess. These are their point totals in their 3 games: 16 points, 13 points, and 9 points. So that's not trending. That's not trending a good direction at all. Like, this is really ugly on the Giants side.
No, and I don't think it's going to get much better, because Darius Slayton, who we've talked about a lot and who is a player I absolutely adore, draws obviously a tough matchup against Jalen Ramsey. I am interested to see if there is one thing I am watching and I am projecting anxiously, I suppose, is as much as I can get anxious about the New York Giants right now. about Devonta Freeman and his workload in this one. I mean, the Rams, we've talked about them being sneaky bad against the run. So there is an opportunity here, yeah. But nothing particular. I was not, obviously, what we saw out of him in week three is not what I think will be his regular workload moving forward. But I was a bit dismayed at how bad the operation seemed altogether.
Yeah, that's fair. I do think that Freeman is going to, like, there's going to be a game where Freeman finally gets like 15 carries and three catches. And that's probably when you're going to want to take him to the trade market in your league. Like, I don't think he's necessarily going to be some great asset all year. But it was good to see him just play at all, right? Because he was a late week signing, basically had a Zoom meeting with the team and shook some hands. And then he was like, okay, we need you to carry the ball five times today. Like, I mean, it was an unenviable situation that he was in. So I think you have to throw last week out the window for him.
We talked about the Ravens and how their meeting with the Kansas City Chiefs didn't really go as planned, at least for Ravens fans. Their defense, the Ravens, could not stop Patrick Mahomes, but can the Patriots? New England is traveling to Kansas City. I still have Patrick Mahomes as like a top six quarterback because, as we've said on this program plenty of times, three touchdowns and 300 yards is the expectation. So thank you.
Yeah, his worst fantasy weeks are still top 10 fantasy weeks. You can't really drop him outside the top five, top six. He's playing at a level that is rare in the history of the NFL. Like, there's just no way that I would sit him. And Tyreek Hill is one of those guys who, despite, you know, he can have a challenging matchup, but he's like the one guy in the NFL that has something close to world-class speed, you know, or at least he did when he came into the league. Like, you can't, there's no individual defensive player who can account for that. So Tyreek, and I mean, we've just seen some throws to Tyreek this year that were flat out obscene, absolutely obscene. So you can't get too in your head about any elements of the Kansas City offense. You have to start them all.
When we look at New England, you know, for Mad Bets, we did a question as to who would score the most touchdowns, Cam Newton or Patrick Mahomes. And in fact, Patrick Mahomes was giving 1.5. So so Cam would need to score two more touchdowns total than Patrick Mahomes in order to win the bet. But I am intrigued by this matchup because we've seen different defense, but we've seen Cam hang through the air with his clearly resurgent shoulder, and we've seen him do it on the ground. So this is going to be intriguing in terms of which of his receiving weapons step up. I also want to note before I forget, or so I don't forget, that James White is expected back for this. So as much as we enjoyed seeing Rex Burkhead crowd surf into the end zone, I think some of those opportunities will go back to James White.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because Burkhead was that one guy from the waiver wire this week that I just thought was total fool's gold. Like we see a Rex Burkhead game pretty much every year, and Rex Burkhead never takes over that backfield workload, right? Like Harris is coming back as well. Maybe if not this week, he's at least coming off IR. James White being back in the mix is going to change an awful lot. He has to play a bunch of snaps. Like hopefully you left Rex Burkhead alone and left it, unless it's a monstrously deep league. Cause you know, you missed his one big game. Sorry, but it doesn't mean that he's going to follow it up with another multi-touchdown performance.
I also want to see how the Kansas City defense keys in on N'Keal Harry, whether they think he is someone that deserves their attention or not. He has had this ankle issue on and off, but I believe he's going to be healthy enough to play, in which case I want to see, again, less of his production, because I don't really think that many people are starting out of necessity N'Keal Harry right now, right? But, like, I want to see what sort of attention he receives, because then I'll be able to better judge his worth within the landscape.
Well, they're also a team that if they're going to, like, if they expect to actually make a postseason run of any kind, like, they need to find a second guy, because now it's like Minnesota. Julian Edelman is actually, he's seeing over 50% of the air yards on that team, which is just not what you think of when you think of Julian Edelman, right? Like, he's more of a chain mover. Obviously, that has been his role throughout his New England career. But all of a sudden, his average targeted air yards are way up. They're like, you know, it went from like 9 to 12 this season. And he's seeing literally 50% of the yardage opportunities. So it can't remain that way forever in this offense. They're just not going to be able to hang with teams like the Chiefs, like the Ravens.
Buffalo at Las Vegas is interesting to me because the question is, of course, can Josh Allen, for the fourth consecutive week, pass for over 300 yards? And obviously this is an offense that is catering towards Josh Allen's the things he can do well, right? He hasn't, I believe, you know, it was a bit of a weird call, but like the only interception he had last week was over 30 yards. All of his touchdowns last week came under 15 yards. So they know what he can do. They're trying to fix accuracy, obviously. But even though he has this really strong arm, by like not making him throw the ball as far, that makes complete sense. But when I look at this matchup, I think about, frankly, what the Patriots did by taking away Darren Waller. And then because that's Las Vegas's, especially when you look at the injuries to Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs, that's their biggest playmaker. And last week we saw Buffalo key in on Tyler Higbee and take him away. So we know that they have the ability to take away the tight end if that's part of the game plan. So then is this a Hunter Renfrow game? Because we even saw last year when Waller was compromised, Hunter Renfrow became that security blanket, totally different in terms of electric ability, right? Or explosiveness, but he got fed a lot more in those situations.
Yeah, that was the name that I'd highlighted on the Raiders side for this one. Without Edwards, without Ruggs, they're going to need to lean on Renfrow. Like this is it's actually going to surprise me if Renfrow doesn't see 10 or 12 targets in this one. There's just not a lot of names left. That like, does Nelson Aguilar interest you? Does Zay Jones interest? Like, I mean, that's what we're talking about. This is going to be a really ugly receiving core minus Darren Waller, without Ruggs and Edwards, without the rookies. So this is like, this shapes up for sure as a Hunter Renfrow game.
But so get back to it, as you were talking, I realized that I didn't finish my point because I got waylaid by Hunter Renfrow. But Josh Allen then, Josh Allen, could he pass for over 300 yards again? Maybe. I don't think he's going to need to, though. Like, why in the world? This could very, very likely become a run for Singletary, Moss, if he's back. I believe he is expected to play. Like, this could become a run-focused effort down the second half, because if Waller's not available and it's just Hunter Renfrow, I don't think that Josh Allen's going to need to put the ball in the air.
I think it would probably benefit me to stop talking about things that Josh Allen can't do or won't do, because he keeps doing enough. Them, right? Like he's an almost entirely new player this year. Like he's he's making touch throws, he's hitting these little crossers, like he's making throws that he has not made at any point in his career, either as a college player or as a pro. Like he is about as improved as it gets in the NFL. He's been great. Like the one little thing you'd say with Allen is he still gets a little loose with the football, like as a runner and in the pocket, and fumbles are pretty clearly still going to be a problem, but he's just going to be a fantasy monster the rest of the year. I don't want to, I'm out of the game of placing limits on Josh Allen for now.
How do you feel about placing limits on Carson Wentz?
Oh, hell yeah. I've
cause he was, you know, the only limit list for you last week.
Well, I mean, that was the thing. Like, it was Cincinnati. And if you can't have, like, I don't know, he made some plays, but he also made some, like, he continues to make some boneheaded plays, too. And he's not the Wentz that he should be, that you would have projected at this point in his career. And last week was like the get right game for him. And if it didn't happen, and it didn't, I think if you're in a one QB league, you have to let him go. It was probably the time to let him go, like ahead of last week, and I just didn't want to believe it. So the only places where I'm still holding on to Carson Wentz are super flex leagues where you've just got no options except to hope.
Well, we're mentioning Carson Wentz obviously because he's traveling to San Francisco. The matchup better than it could have been for Wentz given the injuries to San Francisco, but San Francisco is likely getting Kittle back. Still no Mostert, still no Jimmy G, but man, if you thought the 49ers had injury issues, here's something. Greg Ward was the only wide receiver at Eagles practice on Thursday.
Yeah, they're trying to get Alshon Jeffrey into some sort of operational capacity, right? Like ahead of schedule. They've got nothing left in the receiving core. The offensive line has been a problem. The quarterback has been a problem probably because of those first two things. It's rough, and no Goddard. It's going to be like, it sets up as potentially the Zach Ertz show, which is, you know, one of those classic 14 catch, 80 yard, no touchdown Zach Ertz games could await you. A stat that I want to throw out there on Kittle, and he's coming back from injury. It might not be like fully operational Death Star Kittle, but a couple years ago with Nick Mullins, in the 8 Nick Mullins games, here's what it looked like for Kittle. It was 9.9 targets per game, 99.1 yards per game, and like he scored a touchdown like every other week. He was like, in his record-setting season, he was at his absolute best with Nick Mullins. Mullins was targeting him about 30% of the time. Like, that pairing was really, really good for fantasy. Not that you need anybody to tell you to start George Kittle, but you should feel especially good about him with Mullins.
I have him grabbing 6 balls for over 75 yards and a touchdown, and I felt that that was a conservative estimate because he was coming off of an injury. Yeah. All right, Monday night game. We are almost at the end. Atlanta at Green Bay. This should be fun. The extra day could help a few players on both sides to get back to action. It's not actually, you know, that great of a help to fantasy managers, but you've got Devontae and Julio returning to practice on Thursday. Man, wouldn't it be like, I really want to have Devontae Adams and Julio Jones back for this because this should be a fun game.
Yeah, and the extra day obviously should help in both cases. And we know how this game ends, right? Like, this game ends with Atlanta either blowing a lead or just never quite keeping up with the Packers, because like all Atlanta games end the same way, it seems. So we know how this game ends, but it's going to be tough for Aaron Rodgers if he's really only got Aaron Jones and Valdez Scantling to throw to. I would be hopeful that Devontae Adams can come back for this and see his customary 14 targets.
Don't sleep on Robert Tonyan. I mean, I think that he is a
baby Kittle, I'm told. Yeah.
I think that he is a real thing. Indiana State, started at Indiana State as a quarterback, converted to a receiver. You know, he has been a top in terms of snaps and targets, this tight end, this Michigas of tight ends that Green Bay has going. So I think Atlanta's not been able to contain much of anything, especially the middle. So if you, again, are really hurting at tight end, I'm throwing a dart at him. He's $10, obviously, in our DFS game. So I like him. We do think, though, that Julio is going to play, right?
We do think that Julio is going to play. Yeah, it's looking good for Julio. He was out there at least in some capacity in practice with midweek, which is a really good sign. Yeah, and these two defenses have been they allow 8.1 and 8.4 yards per pass attempt. So neither one has done a particularly great job stopping the pass, and that's all either side wants to do. So it should be fun as long as we can get the prime players healthy.
Also, I mean, that's part of the reason that Vegas has the over-under at 56.5 for this contest. I also think we should keep an eye on Brian Hill, but more on that in a moment. In fact, looking ahead to Sunday, let's make some nutty predictions thanks to Planters. Andy, what is your nuttiest prediction for Sunday's games?
Yeah, give me Kenyon Drake as the overall fantasy RB1. I think it happens here. Obviously, I'm not taking a bold stance on like some under-rostered player here, but it's Carolina. Carolina has been just about the friendliest matchup to the running back position all season. And you look at the schedule for Drake in the weeks ahead. It's Carolina. It's the Jets. It's Dallas. There's not a difficult opponent coming up over the next month or so. I think he's on the verge of a binge here. And I know from your tweets that people are unhappy with Kenyon Drake right now. So I think he's somebody you can trade for ahead of a bunch of boom weeks.
I want to talk about Brian Hill. Who is Brian Hill? Well, he is more than just a former Wyoming Cowboy. That's who he is. He's a physical runner who doesn't shy away from contact, and he showed his ability to get well downhill in week 3. Now, Todd Gurley outsnapped Brian Hill, but Brian Hill produced just 2 fewer yards than Todd Gurley on 5 fewer touches. So I think that Brian Hill has the fresher legs, obviously, the obvious burst, and I like him in this matchup. The Packers defense, run defense, is allowing 5.5 yards per carry and an average of 178 scrimmage yards per week to opposing running backs. When I look at Hill's ability, when I see that he is involved in the passing game, when I know that there are injuries to the other Falcons wide receivers, I think that this might be a Wally Pitt moment for Brian Hill. All right, those were some nutty predictions right there. 2 running back breakouts. What can you say? We're a bit nuts. Thanks again to Planters. We remind you at home or wherever you are to stay satisfied with Planters. All right, Andy, that is going to do it for our episode. But if you are still hankering for more podcasts, you've come to the right place. We got a bunch of them at Yahoo. Check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor, and the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and Pat Forty. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at LizLoza_FF. That's at Andy Behrens. One more thanks to Planters. It's all happening, guys. It is all happening. Matt and I will be back to recap week 4 first thing on Monday morning. For now, though, we're out.